You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wood.
And I'm Jennifer Connor.
From Equestrian Businesswomen, and you're listening to Equestrian B2B, the podcast that brings together industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and equestrians for conversations about how they build and sustain a successful business.
On today's show, we speak with Dr. Sam Fielding about her journey from acupuncturist to mindset coach. She gives tips about shifting your mindset, breaks down myths surrounding mindset, and gives us an update on the Mongol Derby.
Dr. Sam is an Ivy League educated doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine. Coming from a family of orthopedic surgeons, she found her way to acupuncture through her lifelong passion for horses. Growing up in Maryland, Sam rode hunters, jumpers, and event horses, as well as worked professionally for steeplechase and timber racehorse trainers. All she wanted to do was ride professionally, but with zero support from her family in a career as a pro rider, she chose to go to vet school instead. As life will do, she quickly realized that being a vet wasn't the life for her and began a decades-long journey of following the crumbs to a life that she could never have imagined. From a horse-obsessed kid straight out of college to becoming a professional skier in 5 years from a pretty mediocre beginner, the love of the amazing rides she chased in her youth became a life filled with following her bliss in whatever life provided. And that meant over two decades away from horses full-time.
After a debilitating struggle with PPD, after the birth of her first daughter, struggling from suicide, she found her way back to a life she thought she'd never experience again with the help of horses. It has become her life's work to share her understanding of how we shape the worlds we live in through the power of our minds, and firmly believes that all lovers of horses share a unique gift in our connection to the horses. She shares her perspective on the power of our connection to horses and its purpose to help us heal as individual humans, and from there expand our compassion to help heal not only our communities, but also heal the world. It all starts with each of us in our own minds, says Dr. Sam.
Hey, Equestrian B2B podcast listeners. Ready to level up your biz?
Ride Every Stride specializes in tailoring brand identities for equestrian businesses. From logo development, essential stable accessories, and custom product branding to exclusive awards, VIP event must-haves, and chic apparel, they've got you covered.
Visit RideEveryStride.com. Use code B2B15, that's B2B15, at checkout for an exclusive 15% discount.
Elevate your brand with Ride Every Stride, supporting women in business and equestrian excellence. We're so excited to have Dr. Sam Fielding on for an entire episode. We were able to get a little snippet from Women in Business when she came to do a talk for us there, but to hear more about your journey and get an update on the Mongol Derby, we're really excited to have you on today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's nice to be able to chat with you guys again.
Same. Yeah.
So we're going to jump right in. And I kind of wanted to talk about your journey from going from an acupuncturist into this mindset coach business that you have going on.
Yeah. It's funny because it doesn't make a lot of logical sense when you think about it, because here I am. My acupuncture practice really truly was working with people in the office, treating all kinds of ailments, you know, sports injuries, migraines, you name it. It could be anything and everything. But the thing that I saw over and over with my clients that were coming in, you know, I had patients that would come and see me regularly for not just injuries and things like that, but kind of maintenance. And what I found was I was seeing and hearing the same things over and over, literally the same stories, the same kind of lead up to things happening with ailments, whether it was GI issues. I can think of a specific patient who just had a really hard time with her weight, and she knew what she was doing. She knew she was eating kind of mindlessly in the evenings, watching TV, doing those kinds of things. But she just couldn't change those patterns. And, you know, That was a really obvious one. I literally was listening to her tell the story and I thought, God, I've heard this story like five times. She doesn't even realize she's telling me the same story, really. Mm. So that one was pretty obvious, but there were so many other clients that I was working with that you could tell that it wasn't a matter of not knowing what to do. They just couldn't stop themselves. They literally couldn't actually keep themselves from doing those things. And it was kind of that combined with my own personal experience with postpartum depression and some pretty intense anxiety that I'd never experienced before in my life that made me start to really examine what can you do with the mind and why are we doing some of these things to ourselves, even though we don't want it to happen, really, truly. And I started to explore, really just looking at it from a practical sense of where is it that the breakdown happens where people can't change what they're doing. And it was interesting in my own personal experience to really see firsthand what wasn't working and what I felt like I needed in those moments where, you know, all your logical thinking isn't really helping. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty clear to me that there was a level of, you know, unconscious behavior at play. And that kind of led me to explore the hypnosis work. And then it kind of morphed from there, trying to understand how can I better help my patients. And then COVID hit. So it was like, I'm not going to go into the office. I can't really go and practice the way I was. And that really kind of started the ball with the mindset work and realizing like, okay, how do I kind of shift and pivot and do something with the skills that I have. But I also was at this place where I realized that I wanted to bring riding back into my life in a more kind of front and center way. I had the good fortune of growing up working for some professionals, and I really loved being immersed in the industry part of it. Like, I love riding, but I really liked having it kind of be my work and almost like have an excuse to think about and talk about and have all horse things in my world. So I kind of melded everything there into that mindset and coaching work. And I realized, well, everything I do with my patients really applies to what I see tons of riders struggling with anxiety or fear, whether it's like an intense paralyzing kind of thing or just kind of low level, like, why am I not motivated? Why can I not move past this level? So, yeah, that's how it kind of migrated from clinical practice to more of the coaching and mindset work.
Did you kind of use yourself as a guinea pig to get it rolling, would you say?
Totally. Yes. I'm a total, I test everything on myself. So, you know, when it comes to acupuncture or the stuff I recommend to my patients or the mindset work, I literally do it on myself. And I mean, for me, I don't want to do something that I don't see working in real time. I mean, I have such a scientific training. Like, people don't necessarily know that the acupuncture, it's kind of, you know, it's Eastern based, but there's a lot of science behind it. And then my background is in biology. So I'm very kind of scientific in my thinking. And while I respect science, I know that there are things that it just, in paper and in a study or in a book, it doesn't always translate to real life. So mm-hmm. I like to test on myself to make sure this thing works. And then if it works, really at the end of the day, people don't care. They want the things that actually help them and change, you know, what they're going through rather than what the book says it should.
Right.
But, yeah.
I love that. You know, we've heard so many stories of people having to pivot during COVID and figure out something else that works for them. But to be able to find something that could sustain your business, that you were still able to help people just in a more mental rather than totally physical way. I think that's such a cool story to hear, and that it turned into really your full-time business, right? I mean, I know you still do acupuncture, but it wasn't just a during COVID thing. It became what you really focused on.
Yeah, it really did. And I think that the more I explore it and the more I try to understand how can I better help people, I realize how, I mean, my thinking is always trying to get to the most encompassing thing that does, like, I want more bang for my buck. So I want to do the things that I think are going to be effective, but also not just kind of short-term thinking. Like, how deep can I go to look at something? If I can get to the root cause or identify an area that is an issue for someone that's going to cover 10 things versus two, then I'm going to go for that. And mindset, I truly can see how it really influences everything. It influences all the decisions we make, whether it's in your business, whether it's in your health, you know, your writing. It's really kind of the catch-all. I mean, that's what we're doing here. You know, we identify with our physical body so much, but it's our mind and how we're processing everything and what decisions come from it that influence everything we do. So the mindset part, to me, is really fascinating, but also it's so powerful. That's the thing that I love about it the most, is that it's sometimes hard for people to grasp because it's not something you can see, but it's something that you can experience and change. And I think that's why I created the work I do with clients and the programs I created the way I did, is that it's not that it doesn't work. It's that most people don't go through the process of kind of trying to change their mindset in the right way. So they're not seeing the right changes or recognizing progress for what it is. And then they give up.
Yeah.
They think it doesn't work. It's not something like weight loss where you can see, like, you can physically feel if your clothes are smaller, or you can see the number on the scale changing. The mindset works so subtle and intangible that I think it's very easy for people to dismiss and say, ah, it's not that big a deal. It didn't work, or I didn't see anything. But really, there's things changing.
Right.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard for people to change their mindset?
You know, I think it's a little bit a matter of, one, it has to be, people have to be ready, right? You have to be in a place in your life where there's something compelling enough to do this work, because it can be kind of confusing. It can be a little bit challenging. But I think it's a matter of perspective more than anything. It's very hard to get outside of your own head. So if you're, and I think it's very difficult for people to do on their own because of the reason, you know, your perspective that you see is, it's literally everything, and you have blind spots. And if you're not being really kind of strategically put into a different way of seeing things that makes sense in the big picture, you might get little snippets of things, but you have no context or reference for whether what you're doing is working or not. And it doesn't feel like progress or change. It's like working with a trainer, right? Like, you can know in theory what to do with your body on the horse and where your leg's supposed to go. But if someone's not telling you, like, that's not it, like, your right leg's doing something different than your left leg, and you're like, well, this feels pretty darn balanced from up here. It's kind of the same thing. You just can't see what you can't see. And it's not that anything's wrong. It's just that it's, and it, you know, I do think that people eventually can figure it out and see it if they're really committed to and determined to figure it out. But it just takes so much freaking longer. Mm-hmm. And there's so much confusion in the way that you might not get the clarity and, like, aha, that you want to feel confident to keep going, like you get when you have someone else saying, okay, well, clearly I see this, because, you know, they can see it from a very objective standpoint. It's very hard when you're in your own perspective and you add in emotion.
Yeah.
And history, it's super hard for people to kind of separate themselves from that successfully, I think.
Do you think society and culture help shape our mindsets too, or make it harder to change?
Yeah, 100%. I think it can definitely go both ways, which is why being in the right environment, I think, is super powerful. Having the right people, or you know, in the beginning, when you're trying to change your perspective and mindset, it's often the ones around you that share that kind of mindset, and, like, family, the way you grow up, or the things you're taught by your parents. I mean, everyone's doing the best they can, but some that stuff's just not helpful.
Yeah.
And it can be a very dicey situation to say, you know what, I don't like the way I was raised or these things that I was taught to believe and they don't work for me, and trying to have the courage to say, I have to do it my own way. That I think is a big hindrance for a lot of people. I think I am fortunate that I just didn't have that. I was always kind of the black sheep. The joke in my world is that I've just always was on the fringe of my family, like the stuff that they wanted to do. They're all doctors and surgeons, and I'm the acupuncturist. Like, I'm just on the fringe of, like, I don't quite totally buy in with everything you guys say. But that can be really hard to kind of extract yourself from. And I think that it does feel like our cultures are changing and things are moving in a direction where people are much more open-minded and less kind of hemmed in by the constraints around them. I think the internet, I mean, it changed so many things, and there's so much talk about kind of decentralizing thing and people getting to think and decide for themselves how they want to be.
Right.
I think it is a powerful influence on our thinking, for better and for worse.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I know for me, I had melanoma cancer, which is what started me on the path of shifting my mindset and, you know, becoming more positive to kind of push through that. And it's been a struggle with a lot of people in my family because they just are not the type of people to buy into, like, being positive. Like, the world is ending a lot and it's just a difficult slope. And my husband did not buy into it. And at first, but as he's seen how I've transformed as a person and the good things that have come into my life and the people that I'm always attracting in it, he's like, wow, it actually works. And he shifted his entire mindset.
Yes.
Like, has really helped him. And I think that his parents, well, his mom has been very receptive to it, seeing both of us kind of evolve, where my family's a little less, they're still a little skeptical about it.
Yeah. And I think it's natural. It's not that, I think all of our families obviously want the best for us, but it's very hard. It takes a really strong kind of mature person and a confident in yourself parent to be able to say, okay, my kid's basically telling me that everything I thought was the right thing for them is they don't buy it. They don't want it. It's no good for them. And it's like a punch in the gut to say, like, you know, the decades of all the stuff I did for you, you don't agree with.
Right. So
it's not even like they may not disagree in principle, but there's that emotional piece is so key. That's why I think the linchpin for a lot of the work I do is understanding that particular moment in our thinking or in our experience, so that you don't get tripped up into making the wrong choice, the wrong decision. And then sometimes once you've made the wrong decision, people are so adamant that they have to be right, that they can't go back. And even though they can rationally see, and literally families can get broken apart because of things like this, they just won't backtrack, because then they have to eat some humble pie. But
yeah,
a lot of the work I talk about is realizing, you know, there's a cost to that, you know, and as individuals, I don't think people recognize until they have a very serious health condition or see someone else going through that, to recognize your mindset isn't just a matter of, like, oh, I want to do well at this or that. It can literally impact your health and your well-being.
Yeah. Right.
And that's, to me, the powerful piece. Of course, everyone wants to ride better, but
yeah,
I mean, this is talking about influencing your relationships and your health. Like you were saying, Jen, your husband changed because he saw you. That's not uncommon. I have so many spouses that are like, yeah, you're a completely different person because of the mindset stuff that you've done for your riding, because it's not really just for the riding.
No, it does. It goes over into your whole lifestyle, because you start thinking about all the places that you could implement it.
Totally. And to me, a lot of the way I work is in the kind of people expect it to be focused on the writing. And I actually go to the other places first, because you have infinitely more chances to work on and understand and practice in the other areas of your life. You get to ride and jump like maybe twice a week if you're lucky, and you've got, what, 20 minutes to try to execute? It's like there's too much pressure and you're not actually going to get what you need out of it. But the same skills are found in those other places of your life if you know what you're doing and what you're looking for and how it helps.
Are there myths or like people have or that are out there about mindset?
You know, it's funny because I've been thinking a lot about that. What are some big kind of misconceptions about how mindset works? And the one that I was thinking about this morning was that mindset is a thing. It almost comes across like, oh, mindset is a thing that you can kind of learn to turn on and off. Like you can read some skills in a book and find some strategies to apply like at the horse show when you're feeling stressed. And it makes it sound like it's as simple as doing some exercises in the moment to allow yourself to kind of change your mindset there. But to me, it can help, but there's a whole foundation of work that is not even being discussed that needs to be there in order for that thing to work. And at the base level, you got to ask a question about, well, why is the problem even there? You know, it's not a matter of looking at why you're nervous about going into the, you know, 3 foot versus 2'6". It's a much deeper issue than that. But I don't know, because it's interesting since my background is so different. I wasn't trained as a sports psychologist. I don't really have that perspective. I come from the lens of the perspective of how everything we are in our physical bodies and our mindset is a function of the energy that we're kind of being. So I don't know. You tell me, what are some of the myths that you guys have heard?
I feel like people often think that things about mindset are a little woo-woo, right?
And I
don't necessarily agree with that. Like, I think it's just basic, getting to know yourself and, you know, figuring out. I like how you mentioned before having somebody like you there to point out when you're on the right path, because it is hard. I've done it myself for a long time. And now I have my husband who's able, he'll be like, oh, you're not really thinking positively. Like, you're going down the wrong road. And he's able to kind of pull me back. But for a long time, it was like me trying to negotiate it myself. And so I think that I've come across people being more like it's a woo-woo type of thing than actually like, I don't even know how to describe it.
No, I get that. I totally get that. It's so funny because I'm so deeply entrenched in the woo-woo stuff now that I'm like, oh, that's woo-woo? I can't even tell.
Right.
Because I totally come from that very skeptical world too. The first time I did acupuncture was I worked for a racehorse trainer in Maryland, and I had hurt my shoulder galloping or doing something in the barn. And he said, oh, well, go to my acupuncturist. And at the time I thought, you go to an acupuncturist? Like, I was shocked. I did not think that was coming. He struck me as the kind of person that would be like, oh, I'll go take some, you know, 1,000 milligrams of Advil, like some ridiculously dangerous amount.
Rebaxin. Go take some of the horse drugs.
Go rub yourself with some horse drugs or something.
Yeah.
But when he sent me to the acupuncturist, I thought, well, shoot, if he goes, I'll give it a shot. And it worked, but I mean, had it not worked well, I definitely would have been one of those people that just clumped it in the woo-woo, like, that's too crazy. Like, that's, how could that stuff work? The mindset stuff to me, though, seems very un-woo-woo, because especially if you're an entrepreneur, like if you read anything about business, you know that the big guys than people doing crazy stuff in their business. We're talking people that seven figures is like, yeah, that's a given. It's all about mindset. Mm. That's the number you read about anyone. You want to know the secret to some billionaire success? It's his mindset. It's not like, it's not his business strategy. It's not, it might be his network. That's another big thing. But mindset is like the number one thing. The way these guys are living their worlds and what they see and expect about themselves, like that is the thing that separates the top guys from the people that are struggling truly. So I don't even, it doesn't come even close to being woo-woo to me anymore.
Well, yeah. And I have to say, when I first started, so the very first book I read about mindset was The Secret, which I think a lot of people start.
Okay, that one comes across as very woo.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like this is crap. Honestly, when I put it down.
I did the same thing.
And then I picked it back up, and then it kind of set me on a path of looking for other information about mindset, right? And and growth mindset with Carol Dweck and some of these other people who I was like, oh, like psychologists are talking about it. So let me go down this avenue and read some stuff about it. So that was helpful. But yeah, my initial thought was, oh, this is crap. This is garbage.
Well, but that's the funny thing is I had the same reaction as both of the gens. and it's first you're like, ooh, this sounds interesting. And then you get a little bit like, okay, this is just crazy talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason that we got left thinking this is crazy talk is because they didn't explain how to do it or why it was working. It was just this magical, like, oh,
it happened.
Right? Like, oh, you just.
And you're like, well, that's not going to just happen for me.
Manifest it. And it's not that simple.
No.
Yeah. It is actually not complex, but it's precise and it's kind of
consistent.
Yes. You have to have a level of consistency. And there's no magic to it. Like, a lot of what I teach in my program talks about the energetics of it, and there's a lot of physics behind it, but I don't think that would have been as sexy a movie as like making it sound like this magical, mystical thing that some people have. It's not. But the interesting thing, Jen, is that I had a similar experience with some of the more pivotal things in my life. The first time I read it, I got the like, oh my God, this is exciting. And then was like, I don't know if I buy this. And I put it down. But then I come back to it and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to revisit this. And then the second time you come back, it often does. It takes you on that journey of like figuring out for you what resonates. Like, okay, maybe you find something a little more science-based that makes you feel a little more comfortable. Because this is, I did a very similar progression with like my health version of that. And then I realized when I went so far into the science, then I started losing the applicability. Like, well, okay, now I'd like to know how this applies to me. Like, how can I make this work? And that's where I felt like I had to find a balance between the woo-woo and the hard science, because neither side was actually helping me. It was kind of like info here, info there, but I want to know, how do I do this?
Right. Yes, that is always my issue with things is, you know, you can talk as much as you want about being positive or whatever it is, but how do I practice it daily? What am I doing specifically? Like, tell me exactly what to do. That's what I need.
Yeah.
And I can't just figure it out for myself by somebody saying I was positive about something.
And but like that's a start, but then how? Like what could actually make it work for me? That was actually one of the major things that I always had in the back of my mind when I was creating my program. And the thing that I felt when I was kind of exploring those moments of anxiety or those, or like really, I don't know how to describe them, but they were like just the crap storm that you're in. Like you're praying for someone to change the situation. Mm-hmm. That's where I always came up against that. I wish I just understood how to do this.
Yeah.
And over time, staying in that and kind of exploring that experience, which is really sucky, but what else do you have to do when you're in that moment, is what I realized and kind of put together in my program. These are the things that helped me avoid getting into those. And this is what you do when they come, because you can't avoid them 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing, was a lot of people are like, that sounds amazing, but what do I do? I like you're saying, Jen, I literally need to be told, do this, follow these steps, and do this for this amount of time so that you can experience things. But that's why I think talking about things from the lens of energy is helpful, because a lot of people, it's a little bit more objective, and then you can go into it with kind of an open mind. I'm going to go and do this thing. But everything I've created in the exercises, I intentionally made sure that when you finish that, you feel different. Mm-hmm. Your state is different. You're in a different energetic place. And I want to show people that that experience is not happenstance. It's literally something that you can take yourself through. And then when people do that with repetition, you start to connect the dots and go, oh, okay, that's how I get from feeling crappy to actually feeling gratitude. Or that's how I get from feeling really negative to actually having a positive mindset, not just like saying a bunch of happy sounding words while inside you're like, I want to punch something.
While we're talking about this, what kind of self-sabotaging behavior do you think people are doing that they're not even recognizing that they're doing?
Well, that's interesting, because that was kind of another thought when you're asking about like, what are some of the things that you see people doing or misconceptions about mindset? And I think that it's that people know what the problem is, you know? So for example, when people come wanting to ride better, they think the issue is that they're nervous before the show, or that the warm-up freaks them out, or, you know, some specific time where they can pinpoint like that doesn't feel good. But to me, there's always some kind of hidden fear in that story that people aren't aware of. And even the best riders have some version of that lingering in there. And when you're riding, it's a problem, because to ride well, you've got to be soft. You got to be relaxed. You have to be able to feel and respond to what's happening in real time to your horse. And if you have any level of fear, or, I mean, a fear is the thing I use to label it, because it's more complex than that. But if you have any level of fear or reservation going on that you're not aware of, which is 90% of it, maybe even 98% of it, it's behind the scenes. It's subconscious, and you're not even knowing what's going on. There is tension. Like, people talk about, you know, like you'll see people on their horse and you can see the tension in them, and you ask them, they're like, I'm fine. Like, their shoulders are all hunched up, or they're like, their hands are really gripping on the reins, and or one more than the other. And they don't have the awareness to actually even pick up where the tension is in their body. And those are very obvious things. But like, if you have someone lay down on the ground and you do a body scan, any of us at any given time, you're going to find tension that you were like, I didn't know that was there. I think that those hidden fears are a big reason that people end up self-sabotaging. And it's not that that's like, there's so many levels of self-sabotage, but to me, at the end of the day, you can trace it back to some fear, whether you don't feel like you're supposed to do something, or you're not good enough to have that success, or you're worried that people are going to think something of you when you do this, or that, you know, like we were saying earlier, that the circle of people around you won't accept you because you think you're better than them, whatever the story is. Those are the kind of things that are happening to most of us without our awareness. And it happens in your writing, it happens in business, it happens in everything we do. And that to me is one of the biggest kind of misconceptions or self-sabotage things that keep people stuck, and it's 100% normal. People, we don't want to acknowledge like, I'm not actually doing as well as I want to do, or I don't think things are working, when a lot of times it's like a first world problem. It's not that we're really struggling, right? It's not that we're struggling to put a roof over our head or eat well, or a lot of the things that truly most of the world does not have that luxury of. But to me, it doesn't, it's not that it doesn't matter, but there's no logical reason, there's no justification for you to dampen down your experience because other people are suffering. Everyone's suffering all over the world, but to not improve your situation because you don't want to admit that things aren't okay, to me is one of the biggest disservices that we do to ourselves. It's okay to admit that it's not working. Like, newsflash, when you work as a practitioner, like an acupuncturist or a doctor, you're in there in your office and you just get this stream of people coming to you with problems. I promise you, every one of them has problems that they're not sharing with other people, but they're coming to me for help. And it, for me as an individual, really changed my perspective to say, you know what? Everybody has something. And I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. And it's no big deal. I don't think any less of my patients because they tell me all these things that are going on or have things that aren't working in their life. It actually is kind of refreshing to be like, oh shoot, if we could all just be normal and acknowledge that there are things that are really not working, then we can actually fix them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny that you talk about how people aren't aware of like their tension. I have two examples of this that are super funny. One is I'll do yoga online with this woman called Yoga by Adrian, and I'll be doing yoga, and all of a sudden she'll be like, pull your right shoulder back or release the tension here. And I'm like, I didn't even know I had it there. Like, I'm like, oh, I felt the difference. The other thing is over the summer, I was taking some reining lessons, and it's so different than riding English. And they kept telling me, you're gripping. I'm like, I don't even know where I'm gripping. Like, what do you mean I'm gripping? What am I gripping? And it's like, no, you got to open your hips and you have to do this. And I was like, it's such a different sensation. But I wasn't even aware that I was like gripping. And having somebody on the ground say that was just like, what?
Yeah. I had, you know, what they commonly throw everything into TMJ, issues, but when I was really stressed years ago, it got so bad that my jaw would pop out of place, and it took a couple years of me trying, reminding myself like every half an hour, unclench your jaw, put your tongue down off the roof of your mouth, like separate your teeth with your lips closed, like all those things that you're supposed to do to like let your jaw go. And I did it so much that I don't have those issues anymore, but now I can feel it when I come back, when it comes back and I'm stressed, that's the very first thing I have to do is start like unclenching my jaw.
Yeah. It's crazy when you catch those little things. Like, I've noticed that and it's odd. It's like, you wonder, where do these things come from?
Mm-hmm.
But I have this thing that I've noticed. I hold my hand in a certain position. If I'm kind of like not 100% there, like relaxed in the situation, I catch myself putting my hand in this certain position. And then I go, oh, what? Why are you doing that? Like, you don't even know that you do it.
Yeah. Totally. And yeah. I think a lot of them are just like coping mechanisms for not dealing with the emotions. And
they have all of those. And we all hold on to some of those. The ones that are sneaky, though, are the ones that stay, you know, like.
Yes.
You really have to be watching someone to see that they're, you know, that their jaw is clenched or their shoulder is tight or that they're like, you know, just kind of contracting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how we protect ourselves.
Yeah. And kids are better at it, right? You know, they are pretty free with their emotions and breaking down whenever they need to.
Yeah.
And adults don't let themselves do that a lot of times.
We're trained not to. We're literally trained as children, and you don't do that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it makes sense why, especially as a parent of two small kids, why we train them to do that, because it's incredibly uncomfortable to watch someone else uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yes.
It's hardwired in us to feel bad with them. But at the same time, you know, and we were talking about earlier why it's hard for parents to accept when you kind of decide I got to do things my own way. It's that same, like, I'm uncomfortable realizing that you're uncomfortable mm-hmm. thing going on. But on some level, we couldn't operate as a society if we didn't teach kids, like, hey, you got to tone it down sometimes. Because
right.
I've seen places where there is not rule and order that we're accustomed to, and it's terrifying. Yeah. Like in Mongolia, they don't have the same driving rules and order that we kind of take for granted here. I mean, you think drivers are bad here, it's like a whole nother level of scary over there, because it's not even like the rules matter.
Yeah.
They're not like, they're kind of irrelevant. But it matters for us to function well in society. But then, like all things, we cross the line where now the individuals have lost their ability to feel safe and happy and be able to express and do things that we all need to do, which is why, like, the work I do, I think, is really, it is for everyone, but it's only really appropriate for the people that are in the right place to do that. That are ready to say, yeah, I want to figure out how to do this. Like, I can feel how I'm hemmed in and I'm not myself. I can feel like I don't have a means to express the fears I have or the insecurities that I feel and move through it. Like, they're totally hampering me and keeping me stuck. Then that's kind of the work that we get to decide to do when we're grownups. And to me, it's a blessing. Like, truly having gone through it and being on the other side, I realize it's a blessing. It's changed my life infinitely for the better. But before, you're like, I don't know if I want to do that. And it takes getting to a point where you're like, I have to do it.
Yeah.
to do that work. And I don't think anyone escapes childhood without having, you know, having all of our little weird quirks and coping mechanisms dampened down to the point where, if you don't look at it later as an adult, then things get really hard.
Right. Yeah.
Or you suffer health consequences and relationships breaking down and things like that. So, yeah.
It's interesting that, like, you talked about the outside perspective, and it takes somebody saying, like, I don't understand why you do it this way, or why, like, my sister-in-law, when she came into the family, like, the way her and her family deal with emotions are like the opposite end of the way my family does. Like, we don't talk about anything. No, we're not going to discuss that. Like, just deal with it. And she would come into, like, family conversations and be like, why is nobody talking about this? And we're like, I don't know what you're talking about. She's like, and so she's the one who, like, pushed us to try, like, talking about things. And because of that, like, that's, I'm trying to do that with my kids now. Like, okay, yes, it's fine to say when you're upset, or it's fine to have these emotions, and it's okay to cry and be angry or whatever it is. And then you have to learn how to deal with it and come out of it better. Yeah. But I love that, you know, that you're able to provide that service for people who don't have someone in their lives who can say, maybe you should think about it a different way.
Yeah. And I think that it's also, for me, one of the big driving kind of focuses in how I created it is that at the end of the day, I don't want people to feel reliant upon me. Like, it's all about learning those skills and having them literally in your own toolbox, so that when you need it, it's automatic. It's not a, like, I have to take myself through this process now. It's just something that you can do. Because one thing I found that I got to kind of a roadblock when I was dealing with my anxiety and postpartum depression was that I felt super reliant on the tools that I was given. Like, okay, so therapy is obviously one of the things, and it helped a lot. Until it didn't. And then it started to become this burden where I'm like, I have to go to these meetings or these, you know, these sessions. And then I almost felt like, I don't want to have to say I'm in the same place. Like, yeah. I should be getting better. And then you kind of sugarcoat things and you're not really making progress. And I also didn't like feeling reliant on those sessions to make me feel better. I wanted to know, like, okay, what do I do when it's Tuesday and I'm not going to talk to her until Friday? I'd, right. like, too many days of suffering. And then the other thing, you know, I tried medication, but even that, it took me months to get the courage up to even try one. And then the first one looked terrible. It made it so much worse. And then I was really scared to even try another one.
Right.
And then it doesn't work for weeks. Mm-hmm. You don't know for 2 weeks unless this thing is going to help. Like, and when you're feeling that bad, like I was, that was not really a good option.
Right.
Yeah.
And it felt like the last resort. So I didn't ever want to feel dependent on something again. I wanted to actually understand, how do I get back to feeling, you know, resilient and able to do things. And this is also for context, like prior to having kids, I was a professional ski patroller. I'd been a wildland firefighter. Like I held lit bombs in my hand and, you know, like literally almost died fighting wildland fires. And here I was, not even able to like take this little pill that the doctor said was going to help me. Like I was absolutely terrified and paralyzed.
Yeah.
So the thought was, I have to do something to get back to the place where, when, you know, the crap is really hitting the fan, I can still think and function like I used to. Like, it didn't paralyze me. How do I get back to that? And the therapy and the medication were not, it didn't get me there. It didn't get me to feeling like I am not intimidated by the uncertainty of everything that's coming. And especially in business, my God, talk about having to feel that 24/7. Like as an entrepreneur, your world is uncertain. It's not like you have a paycheck every month to rely upon. You don't know. And that can be really paralyzing for people. But it's the same, you know, in the riding. You don't know. Horses are horses.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and you can have the best horse in the world and you can be super solid and super confident, but things happen and you don't know. And if you're in horses long enough, you start to see that. Mm-hmm. And it can be there in your mind, like, man, it could go wrong in any minute. So to me, having the ability to have that really strong, confident mindset in the face of all of that is what I want people to have, not to kind of sugarcoat and like, let's just make it look pretty in this one, you know, 30 minute segment so you can survive. Like it goes far beyond that.
Right. And, you know, we've been talking about the consistency and having to put that work in. But for, you know, someone who works with you, is there a change that people can do to see some sort of immediate result that makes them realize, okay, this is working. I want to keep going and working on it even more.
Yeah. You know, and right away when I have multiple ways I work with clients. So I have clients that work with me in a mentorship level, and those ones I take through hypnosis always right off the bat, because the hypnosis piece, especially the form that I do, which is called Rapid Transformational Therapy, RTT for short. It was developed by a hypnotherapist in the UK. And her style is so efficient and it gets right to the point, but in a very gentle way that it helps kind of uncover. Let's look at some of the understanding behind it, that like the benefit that comes from therapy when you kind of see what's going on and you have someone validate. But then we take it a step farther, because the thing that helped you survive those challenging moments when you're younger, that becomes a really strong belief. And if you don't go in and reprogram and rechange the context of that experience, then those beliefs and those patterns are still there. So we go in with the hypnosis to change that. You know, change what the belief is, whether you're not good enough or you weren't lovable or that, you know, that some things aren't available to you. And when you can actually change this, the thinking on a subconscious level, it's really powerful, because then it's like you have this weight lifted off your shoulder where you do feel like, oh, I am good enough to have this thing that I really want. So I like to do that right off the bat, because I want them to immediately feel like this feels different now. I didn't do anything other than change the way I saw something, and that feels awesome. But I also know enough to that if I don't put them into doing something different right away in terms of their day to day. Like we were talking, like, what do I do tomorrow then when I wake up, and what do I, how do I make sure that I maintain this and stay in this new perspective of seeing things? And that's where the program work I do comes into place. Like I found I was telling people the same things. It was really kind of predictable what would come up when you started to change your patterns. And so rather than saying the same thing over and over, I put it into a course. I was like, oh, this is what online courses are for. And the course kind of becomes this is what I want you to do on a daily basis. These are the ways I want you to think about goals. These are the ways I want you to think about, you know, your purpose or your relationships or a lot of the things that come up when you're reframing your thinking. So for the people that don't work with me on the mentorship level, I do offer the course, and I've created a way for them to create their own self-hypnosis recordings and take them through their own process of discovery, of uncovering, you know, what are some of the reasons that I don't feel like I'm good enough. Like there are usually stories in there, but you know, that's not absolutely critical. What's more important is I want them to start to think, well, what do you want to believe? What would the better thought be when you start to feel like, oh, I shouldn't go into that ring, because what do you want to feel? How do you actually want to show up? And that's, you know, when you can do that, because you can actually put yourself in self-hypnosis by listening to a recording. And when you take yourself into that level of reprogramming, it really does, I think, a much broader, it's a more efficient way of getting that programming in there. Like you were saying with your jaw, you had to remind yourself for a long time, very frequently, like, don't do that, don't do that. When you do that on a subconscious level with a hypnosis, you can listen to that recording before you go to bed, and it's really powerful. And then it's kind of like, okay, I don't have to remind myself every half hour. That's in there. That programming is there. So that's, to me, the first way that people can really get that sense of like, wow, this is possible and I could do this. But then also, you know, making sure that they understand that the real growth comes in the rewiring those patterns like you were doing in the brain, in the conscious level, saying like, okay, when I see this pattern, when I have awareness, then I can change it. But I'm sure you felt this way. Sometimes it's hard to even recognize. Having the awareness is something that people, I think, take for granted, like we're talking about with the body scans. And like, Jen, when you're doing yoga, like, oh my God, how did she know that that was tense? Like, we just don't have the awareness. And that's another facet of what people learn, is how can you actually see those things and kind of become your own eyes on the ground, right? Like, you don't necessarily need me if you can understand what it is that I am picking up on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know you said that, you know, people can do kind of the self hypnosis through recordings. If they work with you directly, do you have to be in person?
No, virtually all of my sessions are Zoom. I've worked with people all over the world, in Australia and the Netherlands and California. So yeah, we do them on, well, now it's on Google Meet, but it used to be on Zoom. But yeah, you can do them all virtually.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's not any less powerful. It's just, it's the same. Yeah.
Cool.
And I know you kind of mentioned that you work with people who are kind of ready to do this kind of work, but do you have people that are skeptical, and how do you work with them?
Yeah. So I definitely have people that are skeptical even once they've committed and made the investment and say, okay, I'm doing this thing. But I don't, you know, it doesn't really worry me, because the hypnosis works. I had one client, actually the one who was mindlessly eating. So we did a hypnosis session for her, and she said to me that the whole time she's like, I don't know, like, I don't think this is working. And even after, she's like, well, whatever, we'll see. And she said that she caught herself walking to the cabinet, opening the door to the pantry, like looking at the cookies and watching the whole thing. And then she closed the door and walked away. And she was like, well, I guess it worked. Before she would have grabbed the cookies and been sitting down and not even had any awareness of it. So she didn't even think she was hypnotized and it helped. But I think maybe this is part of your like entrepreneurial journey that in the beginning it worried me more. And I wanted to because I know how powerful it is and I know how it can really literally change someone's life. If anyone felt like remotely ready, I would try and really get them to commit. But now I'm like, you come when you're ready, mm-hmm. because it's easier for everyone. You're going to get more out of it. And I think that any extra resistance you put in is not necessary. The thing about it is that when people are truly ready, it works. It really does work. It's the same thing for acupuncture, because people, there's skeptics that say, oh, it doesn't work. It's just placebo. People want it to work. Well, I've done it on my dog. She doesn't have any, she doesn't have any reason for it to work or not work. It works. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What has being an entrepreneur taught you?
It's interesting because it's a little bit like we were talking about you work on these things. You can come to it because of your writing, and then you notice when you start doing mindset stuff how pervasive it is and all the other places where that similar mindset kind of comes into play. For me, it's never like sports and writing, school, all of those things never were a place where I really felt my mindset falter very much. Mm-hmm. But when I started the entrepreneurial journey, I was literally like, I don't know what this thing is. I don't know how to do it. I have no experience. My family, they're literally all doctors. My dad's an architect. Like, they're all professionals, right? You don't have this same journey that an entrepreneur does. Like, you literally know exactly what you have to do for the next 18 years. And then you go out and you get a practice, you get a job. It's a very different mindset. So being an entrepreneur was where I got to see all of the places that I needed to execute in terms of the mindset. Where were the fears? Where were the limitations? And the power of actually really having the right kind of blueprint in play to keep yourself from falling off the wagon or going off the rails when you feel like freaking out. I think the other thing was noticing, for me, it was way more terrifying than anything else I had tried to do, because there was no guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, this is going to work. And even when it was working, after you validate what you're doing. And then I remember saying, and I did work with a mentor. I remember him saying to him, when this works. And he's like, what do you mean when this works? Like, at that point I had already made six figures and in some crazy short amount of time, 3 or 4 months. And he was like, what do you mean when it's going to work? Like, it's working. But mm-hmm. I still found myself thinking, when's the shoe going to drop? Like, is this actually real? So it's interesting. It's definitely, for me, one of the areas that's pushed me the most in terms of looking at where I can change some of these beliefs that aren't benefiting me truly.
So I've been stalking your website because it's amazing.
Oh, thanks.
And it's one of my favorite websites that I've come across, actually. And I was just wondering, what does the future of your business look like? Like, where are you headed with it?
Yes, that is a good question, because it is changing a lot. I no longer work with that mentor who helped me. He was really instrumental in helping me get going. And I think I needed his approach in the beginning to really push through some of the more I don't know if I can do this thing moments. But I'm realizing, for me, especially because it's kind of his fault, because I used to compartmentalize hard, like writing, work, family. And he, I'd be having a problem in my business, and he'd be like, well, how's your relationship with Brett? This is my husband. And I'd be like, dude, I'm talking about my business. This has nothing to do with him. And he's like, oh, well, what's going on there? And I'd be like, nothing. Like, we have a good relationship. But then when I would start to examine, I'd realize like, oh, I'm not talking to him about these things. Like, we haven't communicated about all of this stuff that's really kind of stressful and intimidating and truly should be a conversation with my partner. So it's kind of his fault that now I'm like, well, my family is really central to my world. My kids are almost 9 and just turned 6. So they're at this age where they want to be around me. They want to do stuff. And I realized that I'm just not a person that does anything half. And so when I work with my clients, it's all in. I'm thinking about how do I help them, you know, their issues and where they are kind of will pop into my experience. And it's not that I don't want that, but I also realized that it was taking so much away from my ability to really be present with my kids, mm-hmm. to do the other things that I needed to do to feel good and to be there for my clients. So I haven't, I've stepped back from the primary focus being on my mentorship work. And I've decided that the other reason I've shifted gears a bit more to offering the program that's a little bit more self kind of, I don't know how to use self-directed, is that I had a lot of people over the years reach out that said, I heard you on a podcast. I, you know, what you said resonated. I really want to work with you. And these people truly could not afford to work with me in the mentorship level. And I always felt bad not having something to give them to say, okay, well, you know, I can't hold your hand and I can't guarantee that I'm going to catch you at those moments that are really pivotal that I know are important to get to where you want to be faster, but you can still learn a lot. You can still make a huge transformation in your life by going through the program part of it itself. So I spent a lot of time, actually, last year I got COVID in February, and that was like after the initial, you can't do anything, you want to die. And I was quarantined and stuck in my room with my computer. I said, I'm going to redo everything. So I went in and I looked at my program and said, what do I need to change here that when I'm usually filling in the gaps, I had to fill in the gaps in the program and make sure that it could actually still meet somebody's needs. And I shifted hard to that. But that website also was interesting because I had tried to build that particular website like 2 years ago. And then, but back then, I was like, I don't need all this. Like, I can't possibly fill out all this content. And it just sat there. And then as I redid the program and realized, okay, I need to change the whole system. So I wanted to make everything a little bit more automated, a little bit. I mean, when people tell you can do things passively, 100%, they're totally blowing smoke up your hoo-ha because it's impossible. It requires effort. Even when you have a passive, more passive product, you're never going to be just sit there and never do anything. So I'll dispel that myth for people if they think it's possible. But you can make things a lot more automated, which I did. And then I decided, okay, my website sucks. I need to revisit this. And I found myself trying to build this website in a builder that wasn't designed to do that. And I found this other, I kept going back to this one site that I love for inspiration. And then I realized, I'm like, wait a minute. I bought a template that she recommended a couple years ago. Like, let me see if I can go and get that template. And how close is it to what I want? I'm like, this is fine. This is perfect. And when I went in there, I'm like, and it has all these pages that I was trying to build that weren't working on the other. It's just funny how that when the timing is right, the timing is right.
Yeah.
And I went in there and banged that out. I had all the content, the copy. I had all the images that I wanted. I knew what I wanted to say. If I had tried to do that 2 years ago, I would have been like,
right.
I don't know. Maybe I should say this. Maybe I should say that. But it's kind of like in your business, you can only do what your business is ready for and what your level of experience is there to meet. And when you can, it comes easily. Like if you feel like you're struggling and treading water or going backwards and trying to create something, then it's probably not ready to be a part of your offer or where you are in your work. Because when it's the timing is right, it literally is like, oh, I could just sit down and bang this thing out.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any other, that's like great wisdom to share, but is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners that you think would be important for them to know about being an entrepreneur?
You definitely need to be a bit fearless, but I think you have to go back and really look at why you're doing it. Like that's, you know, the motivation to change the way I structured my entire business. And some of that actually came from the Mongol Derby. That kind of blew up my world because I realized very clearly after doing that, how short life really is, you know, and how, given the time that you have, like, are you doing the things that you really want to do? And if what you're doing in your business is not it, then don't do it because it's not sustainable. You have to be able to wake up and be really excited about the thing you want to do because, as I said, there's no set it and forget it in the business as an entrepreneur, especially if you're a solopreneur and you're really doing everything yourself. You have to be interested enough and curious enough to look at this thing 1,000 times. You know, you have to go back and you think you're going to one time sit down and look at who your ideal customer is. It's not a one-time exercise. It's a every time you sit down to create something, you have to think about that again.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like thinking about it, or if it feels like it's not the thing for you, then I would say don't do it. And it's kind of funny because there's also a level of, there are things that just feel terrible that you have to push through, right? Mm-hmm. And you just have to get them done. But in order to prevent doing things that are unnecessary or things that you're going to redo later, if you can always come from the lens of asking yourself, is this truly the thing I want to do? And it can change, right? Like it totally changed in my business and that's okay. But I knew enough to know what I needed to do personally. And I made that pivot again, like you can't be so dead set on sticking with something to your detriment. Like I actually was listening to someone talk about BlackBerry. And the thing that killed the BlackBerry, like in the beginning, the BlackBerry was the thing, but he wouldn't give up the damn keyboard.
Yes.
And the keyboard killed him. And that's why the iPhone took over and totally dominated, because they went to the glass keyboard instead of a little buttony keyboard.
Touch screen.
And he lost sight of the fact that the thing that made the BlackBerry so powerful was having the little mini, you know, device that had all your emails and all of your, like, keeping you on task in your pocket. It wasn't the actual keyboard.
Right.
But for some reason, he got so focused on that as being like a proprietary thing that he lost sight of the whole thing. So
yeah,
you got to have your driving force come from you as the motivating factor, because it really is, I wouldn't say it's hard in some ways, but it's more that I think that the successful entrepreneurs don't give up. If your thing isn't working, then look at what isn't working and try something different and then keep going. But if you stop, you're guaranteed to not have it work. But if you go and question and say, okay, I want to do that better, and then do it and do it better. Like that was like my third website. And the first one was pretty crappy. I knew it. The second one, I was like, okay, this is good enough. And then this one, I was like, I like this one. But there's still things that I could change and make better. I know I'm going to go in there and update some of the copy and tweak things here and there. And that's kind of what you do. And doing it in bite-sized chunks. Like, do it when it comes. Don't think you're going to sit down one day and bang it all out.
Yeah. Right.
It's not possible. And then you're going to feel like you got defeated. It's just, that's just not how it works. That's all.
And we've mentioned a few times the Mongol Derby, and it was something we discussed when we saw you in Saratoga last summer. And I think for so many people, it's a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
And we kind of wanted to follow up with that and see how it changed you.
You know, it's so funny because the first thing when I talk about it, and they usually ask me, and like, I haven't talked about it. It took me 6 months to look at the pictures. I didn't even,
really?
I just didn't even want to. It was just so much wrapped into it, emotion. It's so intense. Like no amount of training would have ever gotten me ready for that, I don't think. And I ended up having an old ankle injury that kind of did me in. Because it's just so much time in the tack. And the other thing that's really different than riding our horses is that the getting on and off is the most dangerous part. Because they just don't, they're pretty feral to begin with. But getting off, if your left ankle doesn't work, it's super hard to get out of the saddle very quickly. Plus, you have this big saddle bag on the back of your saddle. You have to swing your leg over and then you have to step off. There's no taking your feet out of your stirrups and sliding down. They do not like that. So I basically had no control of my left ankle. So every time I got off, it was a little bit like, I hope I can get that ankle out of the stirrup in time.
Oh God.
Oh, wow. And this one day I was like, it's just not going to happen. And I ended up kind of sliding down and then spooked my horse. And the other thing is you can't lose your horse because it's Mongolia and it's like, it could be gone. There are people that lost their stuff on day two and they never saw it again. Like it, it was never seen again. So you really didn't want to let go of your horse. So I spook him. He starts to take off and I'm holding on to their bridle has like a little lead rope on there too. And I'm holding on to that, basically getting dragged across the step. And then he takes a hard turn. And then my head just gets whipped onto the ground. And two problems. One, it was a helmet that I got fit in the U.S. for, you know, I would ride like an English rider with my hair up. So the damn thing actually wasn't really the right fit. And I had my hair in a braid for the Derby because I just wanted that little bit of protection on the back of my neck from the sun because the weather was brutal. So the helmet was a little bit loose, which is fine when you don't fall off. When you fall off, it matters.
Yeah.
So my head is hitting the ground, I literally feel my helmet shift. And I'm like, well, that's bad.
Oh, no.
And I've hit my head enough skiing and riding to know that that was a hard hit. Oh. So here I am on the ground contemplating like, oh, that was really hard. And this is the crazy thing that the Derby does to you. I was literally like, I probably have to admit that I just hit my head. Like, do I think I can get away with just going and riding more? But as I'm lying there, I'm like, you know what? This thing is so crazy. The odds of me falling off again because of this ankle are really high. And I also grew up in the steeplechase and timber world and know jockeys that have died because they had a second head injury. Like, you have two small kids to go home to. That is the primary objective of your Mongol Derby. Like, go home.
Right.
So I, but even still, I was having this whole internal battle as I was walking to the horse station because that was why I got off. You, at the end of each leg, you walk your horse in to cool them down so they pass the vet check. And I'm walking up to the horse station minus horse. Oh, no. And I'm thinking, like, I told someone that I was with to ask me three questions because as a ski patroller, I knew that if I lost my short-term memory, I was toast. They were going to be like, nope, you can't ride. And I told her these three words I always used to say to when I was ski patrolling to people that had head injuries. And I was like, blue bird and truck. I'm like, you need to ask me this in like 2 minutes. And if I can't remember it, you guys need to tell the medic everything because I'm bobbled. And the whole time I'm walking up there, I'm kind of looking for my horse, but I'm also just saying blue bird truck in my head. And it was actually hard. Like I had to really focus and it was like, oh my God, I actually might forget these. But I just kept saying them in my head. And then I got up there and every time she checked me, I managed to pass it. But it was just too much of a risk to take for me. Yeah. But then there were signs that it was the right choice because my horse ran off with a herd of wild horses.
Oh my God.
I was like, this is it. I am never seeing that anything. Like it's gone. And they took off up over this hill. I didn't see where they went. And we get to the horse station and I walk up there and a herder is walking towards me with a horse. And you ride so many that you kind of like, unless they're a very unique color, you're like, kind of all, plus I bobbled my head. I'm like, is that my horse? What? And he comes up kind of smiling and hands me my horse. And I'm like, how did he get here? And the the vets were like, yeah, we watched the whole thing. It was crazy. We saw the whole herd gallop up here for no apparent reason. And your horse was with them and they went left and he just peeled off right by himself to us. And they're like, it was really weird. We don't know why he did it. And as they said that, I was like, I could picture this like gigantic hand reaching down from the sky and be like, you go this way, buddy. And him just, because he had no reason to, it wasn't his home. That he didn't know the horses at that station. I mean, they're pretty wild. He should have just stayed with that herd. So that was my first sign, like, okay. Oh, and this horse was not cuddly. And when the herder gave him back to me, the horse just put his head on my shoulder, like almost like he was like, I'm sorry, I had to do that. And then I just, like, they weren't snuggly. Like, you couldn't pet their faces and play with them generally. But then he was just the sweetest thing after that. Like, sorry, we're all good. And I decided to sit it out. And the funny part was the whole time, though, like, it took me a long time to reconcile that that was the right decision. And I was talking to another girl who had a head injury. She had gotten kicked in the head and she was in that horse station. And I was saying, like, yeah, I'm wondering, like, should I have gone out? Should I have gone and ridden that last leg today? And as we were having this conversation, the weather in Mongolia changes really fast. This crazy storm with hail and thunder, like crazy black sky rolls in. And we're like, the ger, which is like a yurt we're in, is shaking. And I'm like, well, if I had any doubt, that kind of sealed the deal for me because I would be out in that.
Yeah.
How many more signs do you need?
Yeah, exactly. The universe is like, please, like, how much do I need to show you that that was the right call?
Right. So, oh my gosh.
Wow. It was so intense. But, you know, it was something that it just brought up a lot of emotion. And I knew it would. Like, when you go through those intense experiences, it's, you're not going to walk out of that thing the same person. And most crazy things I've tried to do, I've pulled off, and I didn't finish the actual Derby. You know, I rode 7 days in the end, and then the other days I could kind of just take it easy. But there was definitely a level of disappointment at not finishing the ride. Now I look back and like, who cares? Like, my ankle is still trashed from that. Like, I pulled the plug at a good time. I can still ride, but what if I had kept going?
Right.
And for what? I think I got what I needed out of the Derby. It was enough to really help me kind of frame where I was in my life, and realize what was really important for me, you know, with my business, my family, everything. You know, you asked about the business, that my coaching work is still going to continue, but I also have always been a lifelong artist, but like a whole nother podcast to tell you that story of why I didn't do it. I have finally committed to doing, you know, to painting more seriously. And I've had an incredible mentor for the last 3 years who's been like, okay, you keep saying that every year, but are you going to finally do it? And I think that after the Derby, it became really clear, like, no letting my fears about whatever around that entrepreneurial journey stop me. Like, it's now. Like, I have time. It's a skill that takes decades of practice. Like, you already burned 20 years not practicing. Like, you got to go for it now. And I really have the Derby to thank for that, because it really helped me realize how much, you know, your time matters. And I'm definitely someone that wants to enjoy what I'm doing, however, you know, whatever it is. I want to be really happy and fulfilled doing that thing. So I'm kind of now running two businesses.
Oh, well, I'm glad you gave us that insight, because I knew I would never do it, but now I know I will never, ever, ever do it. I have two trash knees, so for sure that is not on a list of any bucket list of mine to do. You definitely confirmed that.
We talked to a woman from New Zealand she did the Derby, and then now she does like guided rides in Mongolia, and she has a bunch of different ones, like with horses and
camels.
Yaks and camels. Yep. And all sorts of fun things. And I think when we talked to her, Jen was like, ooh, maybe I should try something. Maybe I should go do something.
Now, like, I mean, there are other ways to have those intense experiences without potential risk for permanent bodily harm. I think.
Yeah, exactly.
I was at a painting workshop just this past week in Aiken, and I met a guy through a mutual friend who had done the Derby in 2017. And she was like, "You guys have to have dinner." And it was great just talking to someone else about it and kind of in a very different time. Like, that was a while ago.
Right.
And he had a lot of the same kind of insights and experiences, and, you know, this, it was a nice confirmation to be like, "What did you think about this part or that part?" And have him be like, "Yeah, that was crazy." Like, it wasn't just me.
What right. I find so crazy is that when I was, before I went to college, I was at a riding stable, and there was a man coming to take riding lessons because he was going to do the Mongol Derby, and he was in his 70s, and I'm pretty sure he must have died doing it because I can't imagine that he made it.
Did he do it? Because there was a guy who was 70 that won.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He went, but the man had never ridden horses before. He was a complete beginner. So, like, I don't know even how he got it in his head, but he was definitely in his 70s, took some lessons so that he could go to Mongol and do the Derby. And I was like, now as I hear people talk about it, which I'd never heard anybody talk about it until we talked to Chloe, like, it was crazy. I was like, yeah, and in my head, I'm like, this man had to have died. I don't know.
But the riding part is actually really minimal. It's the getting on and off, which is like one of the first things you learn when you ride. You don't ride them like we ride at all. So yeah. The actual, once you get the horse going, it's pretty easy. It's just more luck because there's marmot holes. The horses would like plunge a foot into these holes and then have to pull their front end up and out. There are people that had rotational falls. But you basically... The hardest part was navigating, and we had to tack up. They changed the whole way. Like before, the Mongolian herder would tack up your horse and hand it to you and get on. We had to tack them up, and like the vast majority of the times, the herders were like, "Nah, you're never getting the bridle on this one." So they would just do that, and then you would help throw your saddle on. But even that, like people were getting kicked trying to tack up. So the riding was actually probably the easier part, but just so physical because we were riding like 100 kilometers a day, and it was usually three legs, maybe four. So you had to boogie. There was no walking and trotting. Like you had to gallop a good part of it. You had to canter, you had to trot, and then you had to walk to cool down. But it's just the sheer number of hours in the tack. Mm-hmm. Like, just honestly don't think that there's anything that could have prepared for that. You just get uncomfortable after you ride 12 hours a day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it was so great to learn more about what you do and your experiences. And I just really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you for coming and talking with us today.
You're welcome. It was fun.
So at the end of each episode, we ask the same four questions to each guest. And Connor starts with the first.
Okay. What is one action that women can take to make a big difference in their lives?
I think the biggest thing that they can do is, like we were talking about earlier, you know, acknowledge that if something's not working, that you can do something about it. And that really having the mindset to empower yourself is key. Because I think, unfortunately, a lot of women are raised to believe that they're reliant on people. And whether or not it's a in-your-face version of that, culturally, that's our lot. We're kind of made to believe that we don't do certain things or that that's not for us. And I'm very much I've worked with, you know, as a ski patroller or a firefighter, I've done a lot of jobs that are traditionally just for the men. And I promise you that everybody's capable of these things. I'm no superhuman. I mean, I'm pretty strong, but a lot of it is just putting your mind to saying, like, why not me? Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a big thing, I would say.
Great. And what is the best habit that keeps you motivated personally?
Probably exercise. It was a toss-up. When I saw that, I was like, is it meditation or exercise? But for me, it's always been exercise first. I will say meditation now probably is more important, but when my physical body is not feeling strong and healthy, it's virtually impossible to do the mindset stuff. So I think, you know, and at 47, that's why I could even go and attempt the Mongol Derby, is because I've always stayed fit. So I think that, yeah, probably exercise.
What's your favorite horse movie?
Ooh. I don't know. Secretariat?
That's a good one. That's a lot of
most common.
Yeah.
And who would you recommend to be a future guest on this podcast?
I mean, this is what randomly popped into my head, but there's a woman whose program I'm going through right now. She's based out of Australia, but I would say Shirley, because she has this amazing way of breaking down, you know, like a lot of people teach stuff that you need to do for marketing or social media, which is not inherently difficult. But then when you realize to sit down and do it well, it's not that easy. And she has a way of teaching and asking you questions and prompts that actually get you to get to the meat and potatoes of why some people do it better than others. She might be a really interesting person to talk to, because she's created her business, but she's a mom, and her, you know, she does it in a way that is really authentic and kind of with integrity is kind of one of her biggest, you know, part of her brand. And I think that that matters, because I think that a lot of the entrepreneurial information or things that I think are beneficial for people to listen to come from a very male dominated perspective and voice. And it just, if you're a woman talking to women, it doesn't resonate the same as coming from a female perspective. So that's why I think she would be really interesting. She's just an incredible marketer. And I like, that's a skill to understand. How do you do this in a way that doesn't kind of push your people away, but actually tells them exactly and meets them exactly where they are so that they can actually get benefited? I think that's a gift. And I think she'd be an interesting person to talk to if you could pin her to tell. Shirley Mosad. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And thanks again for your time.
Yes, you're welcome.
Tired of searching multiple websites for equestrian products and services? Wish you could browse horses for sale and order supplements in one convenient place? Equivant was created by horse girls who are dedicated to making it easy for fellow equestrians to find what they need for them and their horses.
Equivant partners with small equestrian businesses to advertise products, services, and horses for sale on one convenient marketplace. Shop on equivant.com to find horses for sale, grooming products, supplements, riding apparel, trainers and vets in your area, and much more. They really do have everything you need for you and your horse.
I really loved talking to Sam today. It was such a good follow-up from Equestrian Business Women, Women in Business at Saratoga. She had some nice insights then, and so it was great to be able to like get a whole episode with her to kind of really dive into the whole mindset. I mean, if people have listened to our podcast before, they know that I'm really big into it, and I like to talk about it and think about it, and I found so much of the information very insightful. One of my favorite things was at the end when she was talking about how you can fix anything, you can make the changes. And it brings me back to like a book I read years ago called Everything is Figure Outable. And I say it to myself a lot, like it's everything is figure outable. And that's like exactly the message that I feel like she was giving, is that you're not stuck. You can figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really loved her perspective on things. You know, she has the different backgrounds of science put together with, you know, I don't know, she just seems so practical and straightforward about what she's asking you to do or how she's helping you. And I just really enjoyed talking with her and hearing how she, you know, kind of changed her business from acupuncture solely to, and then to being, you know, the mindset coach, but incorporating other things into it. Yeah, she's really easy to talk to. And yeah.
She breaks it down. She makes it seem like it's very attainable things, and it's not, that it's not the whole question about, whether she thought it was woo-woo or how she would talk to people about it. Like, she does. She comes from a science perspective, so it does break it down. It doesn't make it sound like it's outlandish. Mm-hmm. And I also liked the way she was talking about kind of like she looked at riding and how she wanted to encompass everything in her life. And, you know, that's when she was making that shift into from just acupuncture into the mindset part of it. And I feel that, because I think not enough people are able to do that and mix their interests and say, hey, like, I have this skill and it might be from something else, or I have this information from another business or another part of my life, and how can I apply it into the equestrian? Because we've talked about it before, we get into the equestrian world and there's such a silo of different things. And so I like that, because I really feel like at this point in my life, I've been able to incorporate everything that I'm passionate about and recognize that the horses are an important part of that. And it was nothing that I ever imagined when I was younger.
Right.
Being able to sing together. Like, I thought you had to be a rider, a trainer, you know. It's kind of why I went away from the horses, in a sense of like business, wanted to be in business, or and even though I ended up working at a farm and now I'm in pharma, it's like the horses are kind of always been there for me, but I didn't want to be a rider or a trainer or a groom or any of that. And I am now at a point where I've able to like sync everything together that I'm doing. Equestrian business women, never knew that was going to be a plan.
Same. Yeah. No. It was just cool to also hear her apply how she applies it in her life and what she's gone through, and, you know, the issues that she had to deal with, like her postpartum depression and, right. And yeah, I think, you know, for some people that's really hard to share or to talk about. And she was very no nonsense about what she went through. And I mean, okay, it's probably been a few years and she's has some distance from it, and she's found something that works really well for her. But I loved that she was able to talk about it and say, you know, this is what worked and what didn't work for me, because I think a lot of people can find something that relates to them and can make them feel not as alone in what they're dealing with.
Yeah, because I think that there's a lot of people who might not be able to get over something like that, like the challenge in their life, and the way she kind of broke it down and talked so candidly about it might help somebody for sure. And then I also, it was interesting when she was talking about the mindset of men. And I posted a meme the other day about, you know, I wish women had the confidence of mediocre men. And it made me think of that when she was talking about it. Like, yes, like a lot of men entrepreneurs, they do have this mindset of like making it happen. And it's an interesting place to look at.
Right. Yeah. And I think I see those same qualities in women that I admire in business. I just think there's not as many of them, or we don't know about as many of them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of women, not a lot of women, but there's women that I look at and I say, oh wow, like they go for it. And it's interesting. So I love the whole message of it. I love everything. I think that she was super practical in everything we talked about, and I hope that it really helps some of our listeners going forward.
Same here.
And we're going to move on to more challenging things this week. We're heading out to California. So we're going to wrap up today and find the links to today's guests and the show notes at www.eqbusinesswomen.com. Equestrian B2B is out twice a month on the 1st and the 15th.
You can find out more at eqbusinesswomen.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Find Equestrian B2B wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review. You can have all 20 plus shows of the Horse Radio Network with you wherever you go with their free app for iPhone and Android. Go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network.
Now, go be secure in your decisions.